Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21.
Welcome to It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker and the production of the AS21 Podcast Network. This podcast is available on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and audio.as21.com.
All of those literary cliches I mentioned in the last podcast are a way of saying that I just read Purity by Jonathan Franzen, and I had a great time. I'd been avoiding Franzen novels for years. He was just too much of the zeitgeist of the 2000s, too trendy, too cool, too liked by people and critics whose opinions I didn't care for. And now that I'm reading Freedom, his big book from 2010, I'm beginning to see that my doubts about him at the time were not misplaced. I doubt I knew what the term litbro meant before the latest David Foster Wallace volleys, but there was something about all the writers of that most recent generation that rubbed me the wrong way. Wallace, Franzen, Eggers, Michael Chabon, even Zadie Smith. The whole spirit of their writing seemed earnest to me where it should be ironic, and ironic where it should be earnest. They all struck me as too cool, too self-conscious for any depth to be anything but a pose. Maybe it's my own shallowness for judging them by their looks, but none of them, frankly, look like they've thought deeply a day in their lives. Even David Foster Wallace looked as though he never suffered, but they're all from Hollywood central casting of what a novelist should look like. And then I read an interview with Franzen who said he never really knew or thought of anything about literature until he was 21. And it was all I could do not to scream, "Fuck you!" James Wood, probably the preeminent literary critic of the early 21st century English-speaking world, and to my still slightly limited knowledge, the best, had his own description of it that was, to use our own era's critique of the previous era, strangely gendered in the other direction. He noticed a trend in novel writing which he called hysterical realism, in which he terms the novelists of Generation X more a kind of Frankfurt School entertainer, more concerned with showing how the world works in its material forces with digressions on arcane topics than the more traditional novelistic pursuits of elucidating subtleties of character, being, and situation. This strikes me as both true and a misnomer. Like any art form, there are endless permutations in which an art form can evolve, and it's absolutely true that some of these novels I've read like novels by Google, which are more interested in information than in making the audience feel anything at all. But there is also a pendulum that grounds all forms of study in the models and patterns of the past, and this new novel, arriving in America at the turn of the 21st century and in Europe and Latin America in the mid-20th, is much, much closer to the novel of the 17th and 18th centuries. Those picaresque, digressionary, simultaneously humorous and pedantic novels like Tristram Shandy, Tom Jones, Jacques the Fatalist, and Moll Flanders, all of which reach still further back into the novel's very origins, with works like Simplicius Simplicissimus, Gargantuan Pantagruel, even Don Quixote and the Autobiography of Benvenuto Cellini, which is technically nonfiction, but everybody thinks he made it up anyway. This is a very different, older idea of what the novel is, whose animating purpose is to tell a rollicking story of adventure. And to tell the adventure, you have to do a lot of legwork to set the scene. You have to convey all the information that gives the reader context for the situations in which the characters find themselves. This is not easy to do, and it has to be done at length, and the situations have to be entertaining enough to be enjoyable reading, and the easiest way to make them entertaining is to make them weird and absurd. So if these situations seem weird enough, they probably obscure the characters within the situation. This is a very different kind of novel than the more traditional 19th century type. And the 19th century novel of character and inner thought was so universally beloved because it's embedded in the universal human experience of consciousness. Anna Karenina, Crime and Punishment, these were and remain so beloved because the way the characters think mirrors the way we think, even if the situations are not ones we generally find ourselves in. Aristotle would call that process mimetic. It's as though we experience what they experience, and we think to ourselves that this might be the way we'd react in the same situation. On the other hand, that sort of sympathetic empathy for people different than us is not much in vogue today. And there's nothing today more beloved of readers than sci-fi and fantasy, of course. It's difficult to imagine two genres more grounded in the external setting of the world it builds rather than the mind that perceives. So even if the audience for David Foster Wallace and Dom DeLillo is a very specific demographic, the audiences for Isaac Asimov and J.R.R. Tolkien seem near universal. And who knows? I may have my doubts that genre fiction of living memory will be any more of interest to later readers than Agatha Christie and Arthur Conan Doyle are to today's. But among today's readers, there's no question that all kinds of genre fiction is more beloved and culturally relevant than anything by Zadie Smith and Jonathan Franzen. But Franzen was always a little apart from the rest of them. He was more interested in taking this sort of explaining how the world is approach to writing and regrounding it in the substance of character and feeling. And that sounds at least a little more interesting than cold bites of information that cause a novel to be written nearly as much by the internet as by the writer. There's always been a place in the most traditional novels to find all those social movements of the world represented by character. And that place is allegory. I'm not going to list all the great novelistic allegories. It's practically an honor roll. The brief list I'll make is to show how many different concepts a novel can represent. I suppose it begins with Balzac, and I'll try to say that name now without giggling, who made The Human Comedy. I can't say I've ever found any one book of his truly scintillating, but the point of his Comédie Humaine is to portray as many different types of people as possible in the extremely dynamic and diverse society that was early 19th century Paris. Later, the novelistic allegorist for all time, Thomas Mann, created Buddenbrooks, a 19th century novel published in 1901, through which, by portraying a 19th century German family, he took the reader through all the different traits of character said to belong to each generation of 19th century German life, and prophetically showed the dissolution of that way of life and that family, which could perhaps only lead to the nihilistic fanaticism of the next two generations who try to recapture the old innocent glory. In the 1920s, Mann wrote the other book I'm now reading, The Magic Mountain, which is the ultimate novel of ideas, in which every character in an asylum high up in the mountains seems to represent a completely different philosophy of life in that very intellectually fecund era that makes each character neurotic in a completely different way. And before Mann, there was Dostoevsky and the brothers Karamazov, and every brother represented a different trait of human instinct. The father, Fyodor Karamazov, seems to be an untrained animal who gave into all kinds of instincts in the most pathetic ways, and was eventually murdered, and clearly murdered by one of his sons. The oldest, Dmitri, represents the heart with all of its overwhelming passions, its desire to do good, and the division between the two creates overwhelming suffering for him. And he is blamed for his father's murder. The middle child, Ivan, clearly represents the head, with all its cold calculations for abstract thought and its innate predisposition to nihilism. Whereas Dmitri is predisposed to suffering, Ivan is predisposed to outright insanity and eventually goes crazy and confesses to his father's murder, though he clearly didn't do it. We'll get to what happened in a moment. And then there's Alyosha, the youngest, beloved by all, who clearly represents the soul and has a calling into the priesthood and a monastery, but Father Zosima, the elder of his monastery, sees how screwed up Alyosha's family is and tells Alyosha that he must spend his life tending to his family and to communities at large, and through the good faith of Alyosha in his fellow man and his Holy Mother Church, many characters find that they can start the hard work of redemption. And then there is the illegitimate son, Smerdyakov, who is the negative human experience, the part of humans which they never want to acknowledge, the base, low cunning, the easy gullibility, the pleasure in others' suffering, the base animal instinct and passion for low pursuits, and the desire to revisit suffering inflicted upon oneself onto others. I suppose it goes without saying that he's the brother whom we're meant to be at least 99% sure killed his father. He claimed he did it because of Ivan's dictum that in a world without God, everything is permitted. When Ivan hears this, he becomes so guilt-stricken that he goes crazy and believes himself to be the murderer. The point of all this is that a novel of character can also be a novel of ideas if the characters mean more than just themselves. And this is where Purity excelled. We'll get to that in the next podcast. See you then.
Much of what happened, what is discovered now, will of course be secret. We will not be given the full answer.
This has been It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker, production of the AS21 Podcast Network. Find this and other episodes on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsnoteven past. That's it for this episode, but we'll be back, because the past isn't dead, it's not even past. If you like this podcast, consider becoming a patron of the AS21 Podcast Network. Visit www.patreon.com/AS21 and donate today. Any amount will unlock special perks including bonus episodes and behind-the-scenes tidbits. That's patreon.com/AYS21.
Copyright 2019, AS21 Media, LLC, all rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?